So when you were a little kid, unless you're still a little kid, and you asked your mom or your dad or whoever was taking care of you a question like, can I have some ice cream? And if they answered, maybe, did you know right away from their tone whether you would get ice cream or not? Did you know the difference between maybe and maybe? Sometimes maybes are not really possible, and sometimes they are probable. It is a new year, and I know in my heart, in my head rather, that the difference between December 31st at 11:59 p.m. and January 1st at 12 a.m. is just 1 minute. I know that in my head, but in my heart, December 31st, 11:59 p.m., is so much different than January 1st, 12 a.m. December 31st is filled with all the thoughts of the things I did not do, all the things that did not happen, all my hopes that never materialized. January 1st, well, that's full of possibility. It smacks of the future and not of the past, of what hope there will be. January 1st, 12 a.m., is a reset in my mind. I get to start all over again. And I have to say that I love a blank calendar. Now, not because that means I have no meetings coming up, although sometimes that is nice too. I love a blank calendar because it is full of possibility. I get to fill it in. I spent some time in the past couple of weeks looking ahead and wondering and dreaming. You know, like maybe 2019 will hold a special trip. Or maybe I'll get to go to a great conference. Maybe there will be some surprises. I'm looking forward to summer, where I imagine that there will be the possibility of great sunsets and sunrises, of long days where after dinner I can sit outside and enjoy the peepers and listen to the crickets. Maybe I might start some new habits this year and read some great books. Faith makes hope possible, and I have faith that a blank calendar is full of possibility. I love possibility, and yet one can have too much of a good thing. Our youth brought that up. Years ago, my husband's theater did collaborative work with a theater group from Russia. This sometimes involved his theater group going over to Russia, and sometimes it involved the Russian theater coming over to here, or what we refer to as the Russians. Which, it was always an intense time when the Russians came here. Hosting 10 to 15 people at a time, finding housing for them, arranging for meals and transporting them is all pretty labor intensive, and then you add sort of a little bit of a language block in between. And always, inevitably during these trips, one of the women in the Russian troupe would get her period, and one of us would take her to Wegmans to buy the supplies she needed. And each time, whatever woman it was would stand in that aisle and get just a little frozen. What choice do you make? They would say, in Russia, we don't have this many. Choice overload is a thing. I would bet that many of us experience it in our life. I thought about that the other day when I was in the pasta aisle at Wegman. Really, how many kinds of pasta and brands do you really need? And in my research for this sermon, I came across this little story. Amazon sells 1,161 kinds of toilet brushes. I know, says the author, because I recently spent an evening trying to choose one of them for my new apartment. Nearly an hour later, after reading countless and contradictory reviews and pondering far too many choices, I felt grumpy and tired and simply gave up. And the next day, I happily bought the only toilet brush available at the local dollar store. Having choices is good, and I'm glad that we have them, because We're not all the same, and so we can't all use the same things. But it is possible to have too many choices and too many possibilities. One of the things I think that helps alleviate this kind of stuckness that too many choices can lead to is figuring out what's improbable and removing it from those set of your choices. One of our teens said that, right? If you have a choice with a bunch of things you don't like, it becomes easier. And so if you can whittle down that list of choices, what is improbable or unlikely or you don't like, you have a smaller set of choices. But of course, that begs the question, what makes something probable? Well, to me, it seems like it has to be within the realm of possibility, of reality, which also sounds a little like a circular statement, I get. But I think it's not quite. Imagine, for example, that my life aspiration was to become a professional basketball player. It is unlikely at my age, with my height and my set of abilities, that I am going to become a professional basketball player. But if I wanted to run a 5K race at my age, with my health and some work, I could do that. I could move it from the category of probable to possible. And so I think in order to move something from probable to possible, it has to be out of reach, but not too far out of reach. One way to make things more within your reach, it might be to change your motivation or how you think about it. Our reading this morning touched on that, and here is another story in that vein. The Zenith Drilling Company prided itself on being the best bit-producing company in the world. In many ways, they had revolutionized the industry using tungsten-tipped drill bits. The problem is the competition caught up with them and began to erode Zenith's market share to the point where profitability was in question. The board of directors decided to hire a new CEO who could perhaps help the company recover its previously held market lead status. The new CEO gathered all the leaders and managers to a three-day crisis conference where he asked everyone to clarify what they thought the mission of the company was. After much conversation and deliberation, they decided that their mission was not to make drill bits, but to make the best drill bits in the world. They all agreed that this was an excellent purpose for the company. At which point, the new CEO said, "No. Wrong. Your job is not to make the best drill bits in the world. Rather, it is to make the best holes in the world." They went on to innovate laser drilling and become the best hole-making company in the world. So Zenith Drilling changed the way it thought about the problem, and that led them to a different solution than they expected, but it did lead to a solution. So, let's say you set a resolution to lose weight, and your motivation behind that is some feelings of self-hate or fear, like, I'm ugly, or I'm afraid, I'm unhealthy. With that kind of motivation, you might lose weight. But it's so much negative stuff going on inside your head and your heart and your soul that it's not much of a motivator. What if you change the resolution from I want to be thin to I want to be healthy? I want to be as healthy as I can be. That makes the possibility way more probable. And it really isn't just a word game. It could seem like that, but it is not. If the resolution is I want to be thin, then you have only one outcome and you succeed or fail on that standard. Thin or not thin? If the resolution is I want to be as healthy as I can be, then you are able to use multiple ways to measure that. Weight being one, but also blood pressure or blood sugar or level of activity or how much water you drink or how much sleep you get. Sometimes another way of making things move from the possible to the probable is figuring out what the impediments are that keep you from making it probable. Like, for instance, I really want to use reusable plastic bags all the time. Or not plastic bags, reusable bags all the time. I have a hard time remembering to bring the reusable bags with me. So I actually have a little bag of bags that when I'm done using them, I repack them and I hang them on the back door. And the next time I go out the door, they come with me and I clip them on my car seat. I don't always remember, but I do remember a lot more often because I have sort of reduced the impediment and increased the reminder. At this first month of the year, folks often think about making resolutions, and so this sermon, possible or probable. But this new year is so much bigger than resolutions. The possibility of transformation this year is so probable, especially if we help, if we work at making it happen. Earlier, I said faith makes hope possible. I found that quote in an essay by Jim Wallace, who is an American Christian writer and a political activist. He's best known as being the founder of the magazine Sojourner and is really well known for his advocacy on issues of peace and social justice. He says, simply put, faith makes hope possible. And hope is the single most important ingredient for changing the world. It has continued to provide the energy and sustenance I've needed, not just to keep going, but to be continually renewed. Faith is not something you possess, but rather something you practice. You have to put it in action, or it really doesn't mean anything. Faith changes things. It's the energy of transformation, both for individuals and for a society. Faith makes hope possible, and hope makes the possible probable. I think what's important in Wallace's word is that faith is not a belief, but that it is an action. It's not something you possess, but something you practice. It is the energy of transformation, and that is what making the possible probable is all about. Transformation. And this world is hungry for transformation. Wallace goes on in his essay to say, it took a lot of faith for the early civil rights activist to endure the hatred and violence of the system of racial discrimination. It also required a change in the moral climate and values of the nation to end that system. People really had to believe such things could be done before they were possible. Change always begins with some people making decisions based in hope and then staking their lives on those decisions. South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu always said that people of faith are prisoners of hope. So last year, around this time, we did a Dixieland jazz funeral for the old year because it seemed like 2017, in some ways, was a dumpster fire of a year. 2018 was also hard to get through. And yet I heard new voices saying no to fascism and no to racism and no to sexism and no to patriarchy and no to homophobia. I heard new voices saying yes to fighting climate change, and yes to creating equity in our society, and yes to reforming immigration. I see change coming. Faith, hope, transformation, powerful, powerful words. Powerful because I bet you have somewhere, sometime, somehow experienced faith or hope, or transformation, and you know what that's like, and you probably want a little bit more. These faith, hope, transformation, they turn you around and set you on a new path and shake up your world. Faith is a choice. It is a practice. These are hard times, and it's hard to hold on to hope. My faith is what I turn to in times like these. Faith is a practice. My faith is that I keep trying to show up. And in that showing up, I show myself that there is hope, that I have hope, that it will get better, that I can be part of the solution. I cannot tell you how to be part of the solution. That is something you need to find on your own. Certainly, I'm open to having conversations with you about that. But I do know deep in my heart that you are worthy and you are loved and you have so much to give the world. What if you practiced your faith just a little bit more, made hope just a little more present? How might you change the world? In a world without end, may this be so.